You're listening to Marketing News Canada, Canada's number one show featuring the brightest minds in marketing, PR, and digital advertising.
Welcome to another episode of Marketing News Canada. Today, we're lucky enough to be joined by Ramley John, who is the Managing Director at Product Led, where he works with companies to accelerate their growth using PLG strategies. He's the author of a recently published book and now confirmed Amazon bestseller, Product Led Onboarding. He is also the co-host of Product Led Podcast, and he currently resides in Toronto, Canada with his wife, Joanna, and their two beautiful dogs. Ramley, thank you so much for joining us today. Welcome. Our listeners are really excited to meet you and get to know you a bit better.
Same here. Thanks for the invite, Daryl. I'm super, super excited and stoked that we're talking about marketing focused on Canada. I think that's not often talked about enough.
I know. We need to have more people like us who like to talk about it more.
For sure, man. I'm with you.
Yeah, especially from a budget perspective, eh?
For sure. I mean, budget as well as, I think just often we're taught about us less risky and more risk averse. And I think that's the reason why we don't see as many, we're seeing more unicorn companies rise up. But like, I think I just love to see more like really awesome companies growing homegrown in Toronto, in Canada. Doesn't matter where, Toronto, Vancouver, anywhere. And I'm just proud to be a Canadian and just seeing more companies like Wealthsimple and ClearBank and all this stuff really grow.
Absolutely. And I think that's a really, really awesome transition into your origin story. Obviously, you're very passionate about what you do, about the marketing industry in Canada directly, and you directly impact it quite a bit with the books you publish, with the company that you run. But I think our listeners are really interested into hearing, a little bit of your origin story and how you got into marketing. So can you share a little bit with our listeners about what that looks like?
Yeah, I started off my career in web development, actually, or not web, just development. I was actually developing a very long lost programming language called COBOL, which if anybody is listening to it, that's like so old, written in 70s, and a lot of banks still use it. So I was working for a CPG company and I just realized I wanted to start a company. So I started one, built code. I built like, I've never heard this thing before where like, build it and they will come. That was like my mentality. Unfortunately, that, any story starts off with that saying, build it and they will come, usually doesn't end well. And it didn't end well for that particular startup. I started with another developer friend. And one of the challenges that we had was we were having a hard time trying to acquire users to that app. And I was like, one of my lifelong goals is to start a company and eventually sell it. Like you have, which is amazing, but that's one of my goals. And my gap in skills is marketing. So I started blogging about it, about lean startup and marketing. And I started getting consulting work through my blog. This is way back in 2006 or seven, where the term content marketing was new. People were like, content marketing is a thing. And now everybody's like, content marketing is it is like just the norm. So that's where I really got into consulting, reading more blogs, and I ended up leading some VC-backed marketing for some VC-backed companies based out of Toronto. After that, now I help companies optimize their onboarding experience, which is a critical part of marketing that we can talk a little bit more about later. But like that's where I am right now.
Absolutely, love hearing that you saw a gap in your skills and you attacked it right head on and created a blog about it. Now, this makes me curious about a couple things. One fun thing, what platform back in 2006 what did you blog on? Like what were you using?
Good thing that I understood a little bit about WordPress, because like back then WordPress getting that going was like, oh my goodness, what's happening here? So I made a lot of tweaks in terms of, oh man, I kind of nerded out, spent too much time again on like tweaking the CSS and all the different stuff. So I was blogging on WordPress. And I'm embarrassed with the stuff I was writing then and the way that it looked. So,
that's great. Thanks for sharing. And the second thing that kind of prompts me to think about is, when you started writing about the topics, or at least choosing the topics and what to delve into when it got into marketing, you know, the example of content marketing being something new at the time and you want to learn more and talking about it. As you look at your growth from then until today, do you still take that same approach and address, you know, some of those potential gaps that you see in your knowledge head on like that? Because I think that's really a really inspirational type of approach for people.
Yeah, I mean, I think people are doing it now where they call it build it in public or learn in public, where you would write on Twitter, on Indie Hackers, on other communities about stuff that you're learning and sharing what failed, what didn't work. And that it helps build audience because there's a little bit of authenticity when you share things that don't work, right?
Yeah,
sharing about things that wasn't working at all. It's really, really a great way to build your audience as a personal brand or organization when you're sharing and building an audience and sharing your learnings as you get going. That's how I looked at it. On the second point, there's also the second reason why it's one of the primary reasons why I started a podcast. I host another podcast on my own called Growth Marketing Today, where I interview people about marketing. And I'm it's a little bit selfish. I interview people on something that they're experts in that I want to learn about, like influencer marketing, or I had somebody talk about TikTok marketing. I don't know what I'm too old for TikTok, right? So I had somebody who is younger than me schooling me about TikTok marketing. How do you get content? How do you get views? TikTok ads. And really, that's how I look at that, is I'm learning from talking to somebody, but I'm able to share that in turn with the audience with stuff that I'm learning, stuff I want to learn about. And one of the best ways, in my opinion, maybe just for me, one of the best ways that I learn is through just conversations.
Yeah.
Because sometimes like reading a book is like, oh my goodness, I have to read through this book. Even an audiobook, you have to sit through it. And things are moving too fast in the tech scene, where there are things that hasn't been written or talked about on podcasts, where it's in somebody's brain. And having that conversation on conversations through podcasts is a great way for you to learn, but also to share your learning that you have.
Absolutely. Well, I think our listeners are going to be very curious in terms of the hat that you're wearing right now and speaking to, you know, you talking to experts and people that have information in their brain. Can you tell myself and explain to our listeners, you know, what is product led, and when would they look for, you know, your help?
Yeah, product led has really been around for years, right? And it's not been hasn't been called product led. It's a lot of consumer apps like Netflix or Spotify or Duolingo, where what they would try to do is give you, even mobile app games, they would try to get you to try the app first, experience the value, experience the game before they try to reel you in to become a customer, a paying customer. In the B2B world, in general, what it's been historically is the way to buy software is you need to request a demo. I'm not sure about you, Daryl, but I don't like talking to sales. There are some people who do, but that whole paradigm has starting to shift now in the B2B world. We're like, hey, sure, it's B2B, but you're not really selling to a business. You're selling to a person within that business, and the way that they buy in their personal life, at Costco where they try before they buy, with Netflix where you can do a 7-day trial before you actually make the purchase, is not. They're starting to demand that in the B2B world with buying software, and that's what product led is all about, where you lead with showing value before you actually close the deal. And now what you want to do with product-led growth is tie your success to the users, to the customer success. So the more that they, let's say for Calendly, or let's say we're recording through Squadcast right now, which is recording through podcasts, the more that you're successful and record more episodes with this tool, the more that you'll hopefully pay, because now you're building your business, your persona around it. And when you're still a new podcaster, you pay less. So it just scales up. So the success really tied to it. And that's what we're seeing. There's a lot of strategies and tactics around that. And we help, what we do at product led is help those sales led organizations who are still stuck with requesting a demo to make that shift and make changes in their organization's mentality, their momentum, and their product and pricing to help them to a more product-led approach where it's buyer-centric versus very salesperson-centric.
Definitely. And that resonates really strongly with me. Several parts of what you said, I can't even count on 10 fingers and 10 toes how many of those demos I've been in for, you know, $20,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year software that all always seem to tell me they can do everything. And then the second we onboard them in the actual paid process, not even the trial process, we find out that it's not delivering on what they were promising on or what they had said that it could happen. You know, what they said they could support us on. So I think instrumental shift in helping companies show the audience what their value is and onboarding those audiences specifically to their platform is going to really then, you know, make that huge difference for lifelong clients and lifelong customers. Now, I know, you know, you mentioned that onboarding is the crux, or is maybe not the crux. I know you have that term as well, but onboarding is one of the most pivotal moments of SaaS companies. How do you think onboarding has shifted over the last 5 years?
Sure. I mean, the way that I compared it to is going back to that sales side approach. And you started talking about it there already, where how do you get onboarded in traditional and B2B, let's say with Oracle, or where there's still this enterprise approach, which it works. I mean, don't get me wrong. Just it's a lot of friction for folks, and not everybody wants to talk to sales once again. The way to get onboarded that is somebody jumps on a sales call, right? And then they show you around. They hold the keys, the door. They're gatekeepers to the product and to the value. Once they've shown it to you, Daryl, are you ready to make a purchase? I'll give you a discount. So you make the purchase for usually a year contract, some kind of locked in contract. Once you're in, you're now inside the product finally, right? And you're showing, and it's like, man, this is not what I expected. You mentioned it earlier around making promises that doesn't show in when you start experiencing the product. And maybe you'll get a handhold onboarding from somebody from customer success. Well, they'll point you around because it's very confusing. Think about Salesforce, where they have so many things you can do with that software, and you might need somebody to help you out. And that's exactly what it is. On the other end, now there's this whole try it before you buy with the product-led movement, where there isn't somebody explaining to you what the product is, how to use it, where the features are that you might find interesting. And now you have to help, quote unquote, self-serve people through the product and really experiencing that value. And I think about the onboarding, a good onboarding is like throwing a party and you're a great host. If you, things are starting to open up in Toronto, I'm not sure what it is in Vancouver, but
we're fully open.
Oh, you're really? Okay, so we're starting fully open. When you throw a party as a host, you know, as a get, if Daryl, if you come over to my place, I invite you as a guest. I want to make sure, if I was a great host, hopefully I am, I'll greet you. I'll say, hey Daryl, how's it going? I'll show you where the toilet is. It's very, very important, right? Here's the toilet, Daryl. I'll show you where the food is. I'll show you where the drinks are at. And maybe if there's a hot tub or a karaoke machine, I'll ask you, Daryl, what would you like to, what's fun for you? What would you like to do today? Do you want to go to the hot tub? Do you want to go to karaoke? Do you want to grill some barbecue or something? What is fun for you? So now I'm creating this experience for you, this great experience. And essentially that's what onboarding is, creating that experience for people to feel welcome, to get pointed to value. And chances are, Daryl, if you had a great experience, you're going to invite your friends. You're going to come back. You're going to invite your friends.
Yeah,
and that really is that's the reason why I say it's the crux. It's the pivotal moment, is because if you create that great first impression, like that party, retention is so key for any type of business, even e-commerce, where returning customers is 5 to 6 times cheaper than trying to acquire new customers. So creating that first impression is such an important part of the journey. If we miss it, Like anything in life, if that first date, like if that first job interview, if that first networking, the first time you meet somebody is totally flopped, the chances of you coming back for a second date or getting that second interview or going back to a second coffee for networking will not happen. And that's exactly why I see it here. It's so critical and pivotal.
Wow. I love that comparison to the house party. I hope you have a whole chapter on that in the book. You know, when you say that, it's like, yeah, would I rather go to a party where there's someone standing outside the door? You said gatekeeper, but someone standing outside the door, you know, dressed all nice and being like, do you want to come into this great party I'm hosting? Look at this beautiful facade of the house that I have. Look at my cars that I have in my driveway. Do you want to come in the door? Well, you got to pay me first versus going over to, you know, the next door neighbor who I can hear the music. I'm going to come in. I get seeing everything. Like and then after like 10 minutes or so, you go, do you want to stay and invite your friends maybe? Okay, well, great. Mm. You know, and I love that kind of, clearly, I miss going to house parties, basically, is what your takeaway is here.
I love how you push that metaphor. I'm going to start using that going forward. Oh,
it's a comparable. When
that's product led. You're cooking barbecue and you're making the smell flow out. You're bumping up the music so people hear it. Like you're really leading with the value right away with the product, like the barbecue smell or the music. So thank you for sharing that. I'm going to start using it going forward.
Awesome. I'll look for it. But that's great. And you know, when you talked about content marketing and when you started blogging and how you were talking about it back then and it was this unknown and now everyone adopts it. When you're explaining product led to me right now, I'm sure for myself, as some of our audience members will also resonate with, is the way that you're describing the free trial and being able to show, here are different features, you try it out, then you figure out if you want to work with us or not. How was this ever not the way that people marketed their products? It's the way that our consumer habits are today are in such that if it's not product-led, it seems like it's a scam. It seems like it's going to be something that backfires on you. So that's really great, because all that shows and what the hell makes you feel is you're ahead of the curve, and what you're doing and the lessons that you're teaching and that mission that you're driving home is something that's desperately needed across the industry. Now, I want to touch on another topic. You had talked about being a growth marketer at the core of something that inspires you and something that moves you forward. I've heard this term growth marketer a lot in my industry. Mm. I've met people that are excellent growth marketers. I've met people that I don't know if they're excellent growth marketers or not, you know? And then I met some people where I'm like, this person's lying through their teeth. So I would love to know from your position, someone who is a successful growth marketer and has done this before, when you meet someone who is a growth marketer, how do you diagnose whether they know what they're talking about and one that doesn't know what they're talking about?
Wow, I've never been asked this. This is such a good question around what makes a good growth marketer. Yeah, I mean, the way that I think about it, and something that I've actually written on Twitter or LinkedIn, is around, it's easy when you show your resume, right? Like, or your LinkedIn, you mm-hmm. state the stuff a growth marketer has accomplished, whether that's increasing conversion rate by X percent or increasing recurring revenue by this much. All of that could be a team effort, and that growth marketer just did a very small thing. The way that I look at it is if they can explain the why, the how, and the process exactly, and how they achieved that. And I ask, what are things that didn't work that you tried, and what were some learnings? I think at the core of, I mean, to your point about growth marketing, I feel like growth marketer is now becoming just marketer. it's just what smart marketing does is they experiment and test out before they launch. And it's something that somebody pointed out even around when growth hacking was big or starting around 7 years ago. It's like, man, this has been around in the 70s, and this is what you do is you want to test out two different things for optimizing something. And I think that's exactly what it is. At the core of it is learning. All right, what are they learning? What are the things that they're finding out that's not working and pivoting or changing direction to things that are ones that are strictly working is what I would define as a growth marketer, somebody who can explain the process they do and explain stuff that they've tried that haven't worked, and they're open to that suggestions. There's this other term around growth marketer called growth mindset, where you're open to feedback and you know that you grow through sometimes through pain. Like, it's like going to the gym. Like, I haven't gone to the gym for a while. Things like for
because it's closed. Because it's closed. Yeah.
Yeah, it's closed. Yeah, they just started opening up last Friday in Toronto, the gyms, which is so weird still. But you grow muscles through ripping apart those cells, you know, through pain. There's the saying, no pain, no gain. It's the same thing with growth and marketing. Is if you can't show me the pain, if you can't show me the failure, then is it? And so I start questioning if this is legit or not.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Introducing Wondersuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the Wondersuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Save big money at Menards. Gorilla tapes, glues, and adhesives are perfect for jobs around the house, indoors and out. Gorilla Heavy Duty Construction Adhesive has a 100% waterproof formula that provides a secure bond on any surface. From trim work to landscape block to hanging mirrors, it's all purpose and holds in 30 seconds. Pick it up for your project and head to Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
Absolutely. That's such a good way of putting it. If you can't talk about the learnings from your failures, it either means you're lying about the amount of times you failed or you're unable to learn from your actual mistakes, which are both massive red flags with any hire, let alone a growth marketer. So that's a really good way of putting it. I haven't been to the gym too since COVID happened too, purely because the gyms are closed. That's all.
It's not open. Is it open now in Vancouver?
They're open. Yeah. Vancouver has a lot of, I mean, Toronto's the same thing, but a lot of like popular like group exercise, like ride and those have been open for a while too, which is great. Yeah. Toronto's actually been the worst out of all of Canada, like closed for your barber's just opened up and I'm getting my haircut for like 6 months.
Not us.
No. Yeah. I wore a lot of hats in the beginning of COVID. That's for sure. Well, I'd love to talk about your book a little bit because that's something that's super interesting. I think it you know, not only does it legitimize that you have a bunch of concepts you can talk a lot about, successes and failures included, but it's something that's new to me. And I've never thought about undertaking such a massive undertaking and being able to put out something that is so informative and want to educate. But I do, you know, some of those qualities of why you want to write a book and share knowledge, I do find very valuable. So remind our listeners, what is your book called? And ultimately, when was it published and where can they find it first? I want to be able to start with that.
Sure. I mean, it's called Product-Led Onboarding, and the tagline is how to turn users into lifelong customers. It was published June 8th, 2021. So that was just five, six weeks ago.
Congrats.
Thanks. People can find it. I'm doing it product-led, so you can download the first chapter at onboardingbook.com. Sweet. But that can lead you into Amazon. You can find it anywhere on Amazon now to purchase on Kindle or a paperback version as well.
That's awesome. Can you, I just realized that you're literally doing product-led marketing with your book, with that free chapter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that was the plan. Yeah. Value.
Give our audience, you know, maybe a little bit of a tease and maybe talk us through three different concepts explored and some takeaways. And we can, this doesn't have to be super in depth. I know you obviously could go into a book about it. But yeah, give us a little tease about what we can expect.
Yeah. I mean, in that book, I share a 6-step framework that I've seen over and over again applied in terms of improving onboarding. It's something that Wes Bush, his CEO product, and I have implemented at companies like Mixpanel. We worked with somebody from Microsoft, from Ubisoft, and awesome. Other companies. Essentially, this is usually when people think about onboarding, the first thing they think about is let's just slap on a product to a Ramly and we'll be fine. And I was like, whoa, one second. There's a few things that you need to do. This foundational stuff. It's like building a house and forgetting that you need to have that core foundation, or else that walls will topple down. And those core foundational stuff is in the 6-step framework. It's called Eureka, so I can easily remember. It's a mnemonic device for myself, so that when I'm in shows like this, I can remember the first three of that. The first three of that Eureka framework is the foundational stuff. It's establishing an onboarding team, making sure that it's not just a soul. Usually when I hear onboarding improvements, it's product. But marketing has such a critical role in improving the first experience for users. Think about the copy, the words that it's used in the product tour, the emails, often is assigned, is done by product and engineering, when that's not their specialty, right? Like as marketing folks, we know how to influence behavior or use emotions. And that's such a core part that is often missed by teams because they don't think about marketing at all. So right from the get-go, I say, hey, man, make sure you pull the marketing team in, the product, the customer success and sales, because all of them contribute to that first impression. And if we drop the baton, so to speak, between each of those teams for new users, then we don't have a very streamlined experience for users and they're going to get lost and confused. So that's establish your onboarding team. Then you want to understand what success is for users. That's you RS to refine that first experience to make sure the milestones are set. And then you is understanding and then outlining the whole that first impression step by step. K is to keep users involved inside the product and keep them engaged. And A is to apply the changes and repeat over and over again. So it's not like a massive project. You want to make sure that it's a cyclical process. So I mean, that's just the 6 steps that I see over and over again that it's applied to really improving onboarding.
That's awesome. Thanks for sharing. I'm sure that more than a few of our audience members will probably snipe on over to Amazon. I'd love to take a step back. Thanks for sharing about your book and your background. I think your perspective is definitely very valuable. And having the career and professional trajectory you have, I think I'm really interested into your views on some trends in marketing and in their industry. So personally, for yourself, you know, what are some trends you're seeing in marketing in general, in the brands that you love to follow?
Yes. I mean, and to put context, B2B is where I see the trends. It's where I play. One trend that I see in the B2B space is more of the consumerization of the marketing. And the way I mean by that is people looking in B2B, and this is where product like came from, B2B looking at B2C apps and like Duolingo, other apps. It's like, they're doing this free stuff. We should try this out. And now B2B marketers are starting to realize the value of brand and the value of building a persona, not a persona, but like building a emotional connection that a lot of direct-to-consumer products are doing so well, because there's a lot of, let's say you're trying to launch like razor blades, which is like there's a bunch of razor blades, and then there's that I forget which one it is, but they did this commercial that's absolutely funny. And they talked about their razor. It's like the daily razor blade or one razor a day blade the D2C. You know what I'm talking about, right? Right.
Buck a shave or something.
Yeah, there
like
you
that.
Go.
Yeah, Dollar Shave Club.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
That was awesome.
It was funny.
Yeah.
B2B often is like suits, personal, you know, like proper, but we're selling to humans, and at the end of the day, we're trying to capture their attention. And when you see companies that act more B2C, like let's say Drift or Gong. Gong is a sales tool, or Drift is like a way to have conversation with people in your website directly. They're starting to showcase their founders. They're showcasing stories, and they're more consumer focused, more consumer style marketing that I'm seeing. I'm seeing other brands also jump into YouTube, like Ahrefs, which is an SEO tool, and they're trying to take advantage of TikTok, like all this stuff that a lot of B2C channels are now becoming a B2B play, because they're realizing that, wow, hey man, B2B, B2C, it doesn't matter. It's human to human marketing at the end of the day, and we have to connect on an emotional level with them wherever they're at.
Such an interesting trend, and something that I'm going to challenge my team to do. We work with a couple B2B clients, and I know it's something that is regularly within our pitch cycle, about 30% or so are all B2B clients. And I think that type of approach is definitely something that I'll at least challenge my team to start thinking about. Thank you for sharing. When it comes to advice, obviously, again, want to tap into that brain and that experience that you have. But I would love for you to leave our audience with some advice, especially the audience members. So this is me being greedy. The audience members that work with brands and that maybe work agency side. So both the single consultants and the freelancers, all the way to the agency owners and more. What is a piece of advice that you could provide to these brand marketers today?
Yes, the way that I see it is, and sometimes I get caught up. Speaking to myself, this is my own advice to myself, is I get caught up with the tactics and the coolness of the marketing and all that stuff. At the end of the day, I need to tie all of that back to whatever it is that the client is trying to achieve particularly, and how that's going to help them. So like giving the why to the cool stuff, that's the what. Because I get so caught up with shiny new things. And I think that's it just makes it easier to communicate when you have a deep understanding of what the person you're trying to help out with, the person you're trying to accelerate the growth of the company, what keeps them up at night? What gets them excited? Why is the thing they're trying to achieve super important? And when you embed that into, let's say, the pitch, or in terms of like, here's how this is going to help you take away that nightmare, or this is how this is going to help you achieve that amazing goal. Like, it's going to get you that promotion, or so to speak, whatever they're really trying to achieve in turn as an employee in the organization. It's going to make the whole thing a lot easier. So it's just something that I've been thinking a lot about, is sometimes I need to do marketing in my marketing pitches, so to speak.
Absolutely. It's something that I think a lot of our listeners can save a lot of time and effort heeding that advice. I think you kind of touched on the same approach earlier when you're talking about, you know, why are engineers and devs the one writing some of the most crucial aspects of onboarding, or crucial aspects of someone's first touch with their platform? I think that's a really good point. So, Ramli, I do have one last portion of this podcast, something that I like to do. It's a rapid-fired question round. So I'm looking for gut answers. I'm looking for, they can be single-word answers or single-sentence answers, but I'm not looking for more than anything beyond your gut response. And I think that this rapid-fire question round is really good to help our listeners find some common place with you, as well as understand, you know, when it gets down to the nitty-gritty, how you're going to respond. And these are pretty easy questions, at least some of them for me too, greedy, and I want to know. So I'm going to start with this first one, which is, where do I go the next time I'm in Toronto for good Filipino food?
Yeah, shoot, I forgot what it's called. It's like Kamayan or something like that, or yeah, it's like this boodle fight. I think it's Kamayan. Yeah.
Come on, I'll check it out. What was your first job?
My first job was at Tim Hortons. I was making donuts. Nice. When donuts were being made.
A true Canadian through and through.
It's true.
Yeah. Well, then, quick follow-up. What was your worst job?
Well, it was my Tim Hortons. Oh, man. Just That's making great. Coffee, dude. I couldn't sleep.
Oh, like, yeah. Oh, yeah. You're just sipping that all day.
No, it's just the coffee fumes.
Oh,
you don't have to sip it, but like you are like, I'm inhaling all this caffeine, which I didn't realize was possible.
Oh, geez.
What is the first thing you marketed?
First thing I marketed was probably myself. I think that's often forgotten is during job interviews was marketing myself.
That's great. I know you mentioned that you do a podcast and maybe remind our users what that is, but what is a podcast that you'd recommend to our listeners?
Yeah, I really love if people are into entrepreneurship, just the stories. And I love stories from how I built this by Guy Raz from NPR.
Nice.
Really love great the stories there.
That's awesome. What is one of the apps on your phone that you can't live without?
Yes, I would say probably my calendar app because anything that's not on my calendar doesn't happen, even work.
Got it. I experienced that with my booking error. What is right now, what is your most treasured possession? Material. What is your most treasured? We'll put that on the record though. Ramley's most treasured possession is his wife at the 35-45 minute mark. So you can send that to her later. What is your favorite material object right now?
Yeah. I mean, my phone. I would say it's like this little keyboard that I bought, this mini keyboard. It's a great way to release stress, I guess, and connecting back to making music.
That's sweet. I wish this came up earlier and I could talk more about music. What is a business or marketing book that you'd recommend?
A business or marketing book? I would definitely recommend How to Win Friends and Influence People, something I read over and over each year to win friends. And marketing is making friends and building relationships at scale.
That's awesome. All right. This one's a fun one. So what is a life hack you'd be willing to share with our audience?
Yes. Okay. I would say it's not really a hack. It's journaling. I mean, just writing down things that I'm achieving, things that I'm learning each day has really helped me reflect more and be more thoughtful. I think that's, if I had to suggest anybody, if you're not journaling, it would really help you make decisions and what's influencing you.
Really useful. And then finally, what was the last thing you Googled?
The last thing I Googled, it was probably this movie that I want. It was probably Black Widow. I'm trying to figure it out because I know it just came out on Disney for premiere for $30. I'm like, is this worth $30?
Invite 10 friends over, charge them $5 each.
And I had to buy food for them. I guess it's now a business. Now I have a business movie showing.
That's great. I'm definitely really interested in watching that movie. I'm a big Marvel nerd. That's great. Thank you for answering that. I actually got one last quick question, but it's, can I take a Zoom selfie that I can use for a thumbnail here?
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Amazing. Ramley, it was an absolute pleasure to get to know you a little bit better, to get to know about how you view the marketing world through PLG strategies, as well as the B2B approach. Loved hearing about the trends, loved hearing about your book. I think this will be definitely one of the episodes on Marketing News Canada where our users can go and action a whole ton of stuff that you've recommended and talked through today. So thank you for the time. Really appreciate getting to know you better.
Thanks, Daryl. I really appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
Thanks for listening to Marketing News Canada. For more episodes and other great stories from Canadian marketers, visit marketingnewscanada.com. All episodes are recorded in the Jelly Marketing Studio, thanks to our producer, Chris Penner, and editors Travis Jeffers and The Podfather.
Liberty's leave policy was tremendous. Having the ability to take 16 weeks off, fully paid to bond with my child, was an incredible experience.
At Liberty Mutual, you can find a career that supports you at every step, even baby steps. We offer up to 16 weeks parental leave for new moms and dads. And because not everyone's pathway to parenthood looks the same, we offer robust fertility, surrogacy, and adoption benefits too. Learn more at libertymutualcareers.com and pursue your tomorrow today.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.